go. There we go.
Hey, guys.
It is almost 2 o'clock, but we're still a little early,
because I know we're going to go over.
Hi. If you are in the right room, you are sitting in a voice acting 101 panel. If you're in the wrong room, the door is going to be open the entire time, so whatever you can. I have nothing planned. This is going to be just a Q&A panel.
Okay.
And I am going to essentially function as a direct vein to the U.S., L.A., Dallas voiceover scene. So if you guys have literally any questions about anything related to voiceover, I can give you a pure, honest answer. I won't be doing too many jokes. I'm going to try and give you guys as much information as you can get in the next hour or so. We may go a little bit over, but we'll probably get kicked out before that. But if you don't know who I am, my name is Jonah Scott. I voice Legoshi and Beastars, as well as numerous myriad other characters across fiction and video games and anime. I voice in commercials and TV. I do a lot of things you'll never see, vocalized German musicals, or something that's really weird that pays my bills, but not necessarily things that'll get me booked at a convention or something like that. But that's just the life of a voice actor. So if you guys have any questions at all, we'll go ahead and open up the floor and try and ask what you genuinely want answered. Yeah, go ahead.
First, I want to say that of all the other stuff you've done, I liked you on Super Crooks as Johnny.
My God, me too, dude. Super Crooks is so fun. Nobody knows what Super Crooks is. It's basically Suicide Squad or Ocean's 11, but superheroes. Or super villains, I guess you would say. So it's a bunch of super villains getting together and performing a heist. The last job they need. Anyway, continue.
What are some of the commercials you've done? I might have seen any of them.
I'm here in Cincinnati, in the greater Charleston area. I'm your happy Honda dealer. I'm the guy that's going to be selling you a Honda car or getting you in the door or something like that. I've done medical commercials. I've done back when I wasn't booking anything, this is what I call pre-stars. This is before I booked pre-stars or anything like that. I would do industrial stuff. So things in Los Angeles that you would never see.
Yeah.
Things that people at trade shows for, industrial steel mills would see. They would come to a convention just like this, but it would be a trade show. And they would have a booth there, and they would have a video playing, and I was the voice of the video. And they would pay, and it's industrial, so they would pay pretty well. Better than most animation gigs that you would get, but that was what I would do to pay the bills before I would get, before I got my character work and stuff like that. But so a lot of commercials, and if you hear me on the radio or if you hear somebody that sounds like me on the radio, it might be me. Just add me on Twitter. I'll tell you. So yeah, that's a good question. Thank you. Anybody else? And that's the panel. Thank you guys. Great hour. It's been fantastic. Literally anything you guys want to ask. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, there have been some other voice people at conventions. Rob Paulson was at Anthrocon a few years ago, whenever you've had. Who do you model, who did you like to see and say, okay, I really want to be like him or her or something? And, are there certain voice people that you say, I really like their work?
Yeah, there are a few voice actors. This isn't one of them, but I was, there was a few things that informed my move to Los Angeles. That's a big for somebody like me who comes from a lower middle class family who doesn't have a whole lot of money, to just kind of give me to move to Los Angeles and live there for a year or so. I was watching a dub of an anime, and I'm not going to say what or who, but I was watching a dub of an anime, and I was watching it in college in my dorm room, and my roommate was eating Easy Mac or something like that, and threw a mouthful of food. He was like, dude, you can do that. And I'm like, you know what? I might be able to do that. And, after a joke and some honest consideration, I sat down and I'm just like, yeah, I've been watching anime dubs my entire life, and I never really considered that it was something that you could do as a career path, and not just a career path, but a career path that would lead to something else, that would lead to other things, lead to friendships and other things like that. People that I look up to are, the usual suspects that you would think. I have a habit of being compared to Matthew Mercer and Troy Baker. Those are very, very much influences to my career, some one more than the other. They're very great people. They're some of the kindest people. I got to meet Troy last year at a convention, and he pulled me aside, and we were in a green room, and he's like, "Hey, you voice the house husband, don't you?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, Troy Baker acknowledged my existence! Oh my God!" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "That's my wife's favorite show." And I'm like, "Awesome, cool, I'm in." Matthew Mercer, I got to meet last year. Just a great guy. I never really mentioned voice acting or anything to him. We just sat down and we had a conversation over a couple of drinks about that and IPA. And, you know, we just talked about life and stuff like that. And he's just that kind of guy, you know. So I want to kind of model my career and my life over those people who are grounded and real, and down to earth, and easy to talk to, and, you know, not pretentious. And don't treat this as some sort of weird power move or anything like that. It's you know, I'm a theater actor that can't get theater gigs, so I'm gonna, you know, that kind of thing. Just kind of a little bit of self-deprecation, but, you know, just enough to get you through the day. Matthew Mercer, Troy Baker, really love those guys. And then my peers, people that I talk with and interact with daily. I have a really good friend in Ben Balmaceda, who is a really good friend of mine. We work on similar projects, we audition for similar things. But we're both gamers at heart, right? So we both do streams, and we both, you know, talk shop. Right now, we're playing your Baldur's Gate together.
Karlach is best mommy.
Karlach is best mommy. I do love me some Gale, though. It's a great guy.
Everyone loves
him. And then we were sort of playing Armored Core and Remnant 2, and, like, we're just people that play games together, right? But we just so happen to be voice actors in this medium, and we just so happen to kind of have found each other. And I have numerous friends like that. But yeah, just my own peers. I kind of want to, the thing that motivates me in VO is I want to be in things with them, to act with them, to act opposite them, to engage in scenes with them, so that we can be on panels like this and be like, "Dude, remember the time in blank where we did this and we had a great time?" Or remember when we, like, you know, like, I had a couple of friends where I would, you know, we're in a show together, and in dubs, you don't do theater stuff. You don't get to go home and rehearse things. You don't get to go and, like, block stuff out or anything like that. But we just thought Griffin Quatu, with Louie and V-Stars, we were just like, you know what? This is a fun show. It's theatrically inspired. Let's go to your place and let's just, you know, block a scene out like we would theater, because this is our first real gig and we don't have anything better to do. Right? So I went over to his house, and we blocked out an entire scene just from the manga. We read the manga, and we're just like, okay, how would this, you know, played out in a theatrical space? So it's just fun exercises like that, and people who really inspire me are the people that are currently working with me. You know, there are these people on a pedestal like Matt and Troy, but then there's people on the ground, boots on the ground with you, who are, you know, you cheer for them, they cheer for you. Their successes or your successes. So yeah, it's a lot of making and maintaining friendships as much as it is bowing down and prostrating yourself before the VO gods. Good question, very good question, thank you. Yeah, what's up?
What led you to get the role of Legoshi?
An audition.
Okay.
It was an audition. I, much like any other. So the long story is Bob Buckles, who voices Gene Starwind. If anybody knows the, you know, Outlaw Star, who voices Gene Starwind. He became a he's a very meat and potatoes guy. Very, very grounded, very down to earth. And those are the people that I think get the furthest in this industry are the ones that are realists. They understand the medium. They're not Uber fans or anything like that. They get this as a job, but they also get it that, like, there's a fandom attached to it. I was working on him, and this goes back to the old, like, German musical dubs, right? I was working on him with a Chinese movie that nobody's ever going to see. Don't even remember the title of it. It was something in Cantonese. I don't remember. But working on that, his daughter was directing me on that. Wonderful person, Megan. Megan Buchholz is a great person. She's really fun, really funny in the booth. And she worked with me first on that whole, like, there's a whole company that they both own. And she brought me in. And Bob was directing on another show, and he pulled me aside as we were walking to the booth, and he's like, "Hey, so my daughter says you're good." And I'm like, "Oh, that's really kind of her. Thank you so much." And then he stopped in his tracks, looked me dead in the eye, and says, "No. My daughter says really good." And I'm like, "Oh, now I have to live up to expectations." I can't just, like, coast along on this Chinese dub, right? But that said, the next day, he sent me this audition for a show called Kengan Ashura, which is a another Netflix show. It's a fighting show. Keiji Tang plays the lead. Keiji's another fantastic actor. He plays Toma. But I play this guy who does this, like, he's a hippo. He's got this, like, he's swole and big, and all he does is fight. That's all he knows is fighting, right? And this is a voice that I don't really use ever, right? So he brought me in. He's like, can you, I didn't even audition for this character. He's like, can you do this voice? This guy's name is Lihito. He's just big and swole, and he's like a frat bro. And I'm like, yeah, I can do that, sure. So I just kind of made up this voice. He's like, oh, perfect, good, let's do it. So we did this entire show, and then after that, I get an audition for Beastars, and I'm a weeb, so I know what Beastars is, right? I've read the manga, I've seen the show before it was even, like, dubbed or anything like that, and I knew what character I was auditioning for. So I got to audition for Bill, Louie, and Megashin. And Bob wanted me to play Bill, 100% wanted me to play Bill. And he's like, I want you to play Bill, but I'm going to send this to Netflix and see what they say. So he sent it to Netflix, and Netflix Japan got back, and they sent me a personal email, which never happens, ever, in any other Netflix show I've ever been in. I've never gotten a personal email from Netflix Japan. And Netflix Japan sent me an email that was like, hey, we can think of literally no other person to play this character besides you. And then they sent an email to the director that was like, hey, this is the guy we're picking. And I didn't know that until I was doing another Chinese dub, and Bob was like, hey, so you finally decided, and you're going to voice the wolf guy. And I'm like, the main character of the show that you wanted me to audition for? Yeah, he's very meat, potatoes, grounded guy. He's done thousands of these before. They all kind of blur together at a point. But yeah, that's how I figured it out. I did a backflip in the studio. I'm like, yeah, all right, we're doing it. We're doing the Beastars. And yeah, I had both a moment of elation and existential dread, because it's like, I can't screw this up, because I know how much this means to both me and the entire fandom that watches this. And if I do screw this up, they will know, and everybody will know that this is the first lead role that I've ever been offered. If I screw this up, my career's done, right? Nobody's ever going to want to cast me again, because it's like, you screwed up Legacy, right? So, yeah, it was a lot of pressure, but at the same time, it was really good, and that's how I ended up landing the role of Legacy. It was just through an audition, and through just being a normal guy that the director wanted to work with, and not, and exuberant fan, I kind of had to keep that underground. I was a fan, but I had to make sure to keep a lid on it, just so I didn't show my hand too early. But yeah, good question. Thank you. Yeah, way in the back there, you right there, yeah.
So I know that when you do Legacy, it's pretty much similar to your regular voice.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a time when people have asked you, oh, can you do a voice when you're just normal voice?
Like, all the time. A lot of characters that I voice are just in my natural register. I get cast as, a burden to be sure, but I get cast as a cool, sexy guy a lot. And that's just my, world's smallest violin right there. That's just my normal voice to an extent. There are a few characters recently where I've been able to kind of branch out. I got cast as Kokushibo with Demon Slayer, who's the Upper Moon One. He's like the second lieutenant, I guess you would say, to the entire bad guy deck of cards. And that was fun. Not necessarily my normal voice. A little bit slower, a little bit more methodical, more samurai-y. And then there's characters like Tatsu from Way of the House Husband, who is the titular house husband. And most of his stuff is like this really cool, badass, like baritone. But a lot of the stuff that he does is he just yells, kind of like what Lihito was earlier. He's just like yelling all the time, and this really gritty, gravelly kind of voice. And when I get to do stuff like that, that's super neat. When I get to do stuff that's out of my wheelhouse, but I can pull it off. Stuff that I get to show my range, things like that. But the majority of characters that I get cast as are just like, this normal cool guy who's just like this, just a normal mid to low baritone character. Joe from Skippy Infinity, Ryan Sugar from 86, like a bunch of characters like that. And I like doing that because that affords me, there's less of a window to be a character and there's more of a window to act and like actually perform. I went to college for musical theater. I went to college for like Shakespeare and like actually digging into text and getting intention and reasons for doing what you're doing and being a character and immersing yourself in the moment. And getting to do that in anime is kind of an anomaly for a lot of people, right? But I was very lucky in that most of the characters that I get to do are just my voice. So I think that's cool. When I came into this industry, I always thought that you had to have an anime voice. You had to sound anime, right? But in reality, I'm lucky to be a part of maybe 5 or 6 other actors that are paving a way, and casting directors are kind of slowly starting to realize this, paving a way that makes them realize that grounded, real performances can come from normal voices. You don't have to sound anime all the time, right? You don't have to be a protagonist constantly. You can just still be a dude, and people will believe it, right? People will believe it. It is the suspension of disbelief that you are, you know, reincarnated as a vending machine in another world, right? That alone removes an entire amount of, like, I have to make them believe this. No, they've already bought in with, like, $100 bill, dude. You can just, like, you can be yourself. And then that kind of, like, makes them snap out of it and realize, oh, my God. That doesn't sound anime. That sounds like a real grounded actor. That sounds like, you know, a film actor. Okay, I need more invested now, right? So I'm lucky that I get to do that kind of thing. It's a fantastic question. Thank you. Yeah.
I guess speaking as someone who also kind of does, like, talking for a living, have you ever taken any voice lessons or any techniques that really help you with your work?
Yeah, I have a BFA in musical theater. So I did musical theater all through college. I've been studying how to use my voice since I was like 8 years old. Not to sound like I'm not flexing or anything like that, I promise. My parents put me into acting classes at daycare. They're like, no, we just need to make sure he has something to do on Friday nights from 4 to 6. But then that slowly morphed into, oh, he likes doing this. Okay, that's something else entirely. And from the time I was 8, I kind of was like molded into this whole vocal performance style. And then as I kept doing it, I got better at it and better at it. I was a really good singer. I'm still a pretty good singer. I sing in a metal band, by the way. If you guys haven't checked out Midnight Howl on Spotify, my VTuber is the lead singer of the metal band, and I am the lead singer of the metal band, but also my VTuber is he's the titular character, not me. But please go check that out. We got 5 albums out right now, or 5 singles out right now. But yeah, I've been taught since I was a kid to use my voice in performance, and VO just kind of became a thing that I was like, I like video games. Oh, you can use your voice in video games? Okay, cool, neat, awesome. That's why I went into it initially, and then I realized, like, oh, anime is how you pay your bills, and anime is how you make sure that, you know, things work, and I was a huge weeb anyway, too, so I was like, oh my god, I get to be in Demon Slayer and Attack on Titan, and I'm buying, you know, My Hero and a bunch of really cool stuff. So, yeah, it was a really neat thing. But, yeah, using my voice just kind of came with the territory, honestly. And I had to mold it a little bit to make sure that it worked for anime and singing. But vocal styles is something you learn in college. Vocal styles is something you learn, you know, when you're taking musical theater classes at 8 years old. You learn how to maintain and make sure that stuff is accurate and real and that sells well. That's a good question. Thank you.
So in today's industry, you're seeing a lot of voice actors, musicians kind of go to YouTube, Twitch, kind of those media platforms to kind of like help grow their audience. I know you've been involved with that. How do you feel that kind of decision to kind of push your kind of to gain an audience, to get new opportunities through those platforms? How's that going to progress for time? Like, how do you feel, how important that's going to play in, say, like, 5 years from now?
I have told this to multiple voice actors, and me, Alejandro, Ryan, Keith, and a couple of others have gotten together and realized that if you don't have any sort of, like, as an anime actor, if you don't have any sort of, like, VTuber or Twitch or method to divert your fans to your own content, in the next 5 years you're behind. There are some people that start doing that and then pivot to voiceover, and it becomes less successful. There are a few influencers that have tried to go from, oh, I have 2 million, you know, subscribers on YouTube. You know, I have 1 million people that follow me on Twitter and 500,000 on Twitch, right? I'll be a voice actor. That's just a career pivot. And it doesn't work because they don't have voice acting experience. They don't have any sort of acting experience. They just bring their fandom along, right? And in the grand scheme of things, 250,000 people watching a stream on Crunchyroll is nothing if your performance isn't that good, right? Or if you don't embody the character very well, right? So it's a tough balancing act, really, becoming an influencer as well as doing, you know, VO on the side. You don't like 100% commit yourself to the process. People are buying your name, they're not buying the product. And, you know, when you're selling a product, you probably need people to buy the product because you need people to buy the keychain, you need people to buy the wallets, you need people to buy the Blu-ray DVD especially. So it's hit or miss sometimes. And I feel like the people who go from VO to influencer have way more success than influencer to VO. Now granted, there are definitely some standout exceptions to that. I'm not going to name anybody, obviously, but there are definitely some exceptions to that, but there's a reason that that's the case. I think that my pivot from, not necessarily pivot, but my branching out from VO into like influencer stuff has been fairly successful so far. I do have a VTuber on Twitch. I used to do face camming streaming on Twitch. Right now I stream at twitch.tv/alphaaniki. His whole thing is that I have conglomerated all the characters that I voice into one character that is this YouTubing character, Alphonse McKenzie, which has a stupid name, but he calls himself Alpha, which is an equally stupid name. And his whole thing is that he's like this himbo who wants to be a rock star and doesn't quite understand how hard that is. And I have a whole, like, we're writing a graphic novel. Again, we have our, you know, we have 5 singles out right now. We're going to put out 3 more in the next few months. Metal singer, right? So the vocal thing kind of moves into a bunch of different facets. And I can use my voice in different ways that I feel like are easy. I know I'm on the shell a little bit, but you can come by my album covers. I have, like, you know, 6 album covers for different songs that I commission small artists to do these awesome album covers for us. You can see them on Spotify, you can see them, you can buy them, and I can sign them as Alpha, you know. It's this neat little IP that, one thing that I really noticed is that when you're VTubing, or when you create a character like that, I own that. I don't own Legoshi. So technically, I can't sell anything licensed. I don't own that character or that world. But I do own the character in the world that I created. Right? And I can still borrow tiny things from the character, right? Those are archetypes. You don't own the archetype, right? So I own this character. I can sell whatever I want. I can sell t-shirts. He's got his band, Midnight Howl. I can sell ears. I can sell, you know, whatever I want. And that's just under my own umbrella. So there are a lot of reasons to do that. That's a fantastic question. We work really hard in order to make that stuff work. We put a lot of like man hours into the arts and the writing itself. Fantastic question. Thank you so much.
Yeah, hi. Can I have a 2-part question? So if you don't want to answer the second bit, that's fine. But I was wondering if you talked about the logistics of actually doing voice work. I work at like a place that does a lot of practice studios, but we also have a proper recording thing. And a lot of times they will just book a studio near wherever the voice actor or voiceover artist is, and then we had somebody specifically request like an ISDN line. Do you have to travel when you record, or anything like that?
It depends. Technically, I have to travel every time I want to record anywhere in the valley. I live in the Los Angeles Valley, so you have like the valley, and you have mountains, and then you have downtown, right? So everything that is post-production is usually done in the valley. And that's like audio post, that's the recording of anime, you know, the recording of video games. Most of that stuff is done in the valley. And I do have to travel sometimes. I think the furthest I've traveled in Los Angeles is about 45 minutes to an hour. I voiced the main character in the sequel to Dying Light, Dying Light 2. I voiced Aiden Caldwell. And I had to drive about an hour every day to get to the studio in Santa Monica. So I live in the Valley. You know, think Santa Monica's not that far from the Valley. But I mean, LA traffic, it sometimes gets up to 90 minutes. So you get there, you do your four-hour session, then you're driving home for, you know, your entire commute is about 4 hours.
If only public
anywhere.
Transit existed in Los Angeles.
Well, it technically does, but it's terrible. So I'm like, it's dangerous, it's terrible, and it's way more simple for me to go buy a, you know, $5,000 beater Civic from 2005 and then drive back and forth than it is to, you know, pay for public transit back and forth. Most of the stuff that I do is travel, but a lot of the time it's less than 30 minutes to get to a studio in the Valley. Most of it is in North Hollywood or Burbank itself. You know, you go to Nickelodeon, that's in Burbank. You go to Bang Zoom that records a lot of the LA stuff, Demon Slayer recording.
Is your line producer on site, or are they also remoted in?
That's a very good question.
Yeah, that's what I mean, because like sometimes we basically had somebody where the line producer was somewhere. And they needed to record, and so it was like basically right. A big teleconference, but they just rented a studio. And
oh, that happens a lot. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Essentially, the only person that would be there in physical would be me and then maybe the director. Sometimes they can, you know, do Pro Tools remotely every now and again. But if you're going, say I'm going to, okay, I'll give you a hypothetical, right? I'm going in to record some more Demon Slayer. I'm going to record Demon Slayer, right? You go to Bang Zoom, which is in Burbank. Get a parking spot with your name on it. Pretty cool. But that's just like for everybody during the day. They have all their games down in the parking lot, whatever. Park your car, go in, you sign in, you walk, you know, you go to the kitchen, you make yourself some coffee or whatever, you some tea. I don't like to take advantage too much until I'm done with my session, and then after my session, I go and read the heck out of all the kitchen stuff, and I bring chips and, you know, soda and stuff home. Then you wait for 15 or so minutes for the director to be ready, or the engineer to be ready, what have you. You go back to the studio. You know, I know the engineers, all of them there. I've worked with them for years. You know, I know them by first name. I've been out to dinner with them. I've went to escape rooms with them. They're friends of mine. So we hang out for a little bit, about 10 minutes, to get everything ready. Nowadays, it's mostly ISDN or VoIP.
Yeah, it's weird. Somehow, there are still people who request ISDN. We no longer have ISDN service.
Yeah, most of it's VoIP. You know,
yeah.
Zoom or Skype.
Because we're sending raw files over the internet, so once we're done with the recording, they just need to be there to, like, hear. So, like, half the time, it's Zoom.
Yeah, it can be compressed all hell.
Yeah. Just as long as we
as
deliver.
As long as you get the wave, 44,
yeah.
Right? 44 hertz.
We do 192.24 even.
Yeah, I mean that's fine too.
Ooh,
once you compress
fancy.
It enough to be, once you compress it enough to be into a video game or a show,
Yeah. Nobody
can really tell the difference as long
yeah.
as the video is
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it all goes.
But we do that. We do the session. You know, everybody's on Zoom or. Source Connect is another one we use a lot.
I've heard of that.
And then you record on your own, and if you're remote, if not, they have everything there in the studio. And then you're good to go. Then you go raid the kitchen and, you know, get some chips and a diet soda for your drive home. It's going to be about 30 minutes in LA traffic. And you need a diet soda to get to the day. But fantastic question, especially nowadays where remote is very popular to try and facilitate everything. But yeah, good question. Yeah, right there.
Did the fact that Legoshi is a wolf inform your acting at all, or did that not end up being
obviously, I absolutely love wolves. No, it didn't matter. I mean, it could have been a gazelle for all I care. I do love wolves, though. I'm actually, not a lot of people know this, but I'm actually like an eighth, that's not enough that it matters, I'm like an eighth Native American. My dad, mom, on his mom's side, he's Native American, and my dad, I don't think he should have done this, but my dad went to powwow one time, and he thought it was an absolutely enlightening, eye-opening experience, and he bought all sorts of wolf imagery, and he bought this wonderful sculpture of two wolves licking each other's faces that I thought was beautiful, a bunch of paintings, and authentic Native American art. And I found that to be pretty inspirational. myself. I didn't really realize how much that meant to Native American cultures until my dad did go to powwow. So it may have been a good idea for him to do that. He came back and told me all sorts of wonderful stories. It was very informative. Not that I put any of that into Legoshi himself. A lot of Legoshi is more of my theatrical side than it is my Native American side. It's a lot because, I mean, most of his story revolves around being a participant in theater and then being in a high school drama production and things like that. Less so, you know, having a spiritual journey or anything like that. There is a spiritual journey there, but the wolf imagery itself kind of blended itself into my life as a whole because, I mean, my VTuber, his name is Alphonse McKenzie. He calls himself Alpha, right? Like, he has these, like, wolf ear headphones that he wears. He has this, like, hard, like, claw that he uses all the time. So a lot of it was kind of, you know, through my spirit in that, in my creative way, rather than me applying it to my work itself. I kind of made it into something else, an artistic kind of aspect. But, yeah, wolves are very important to me. Especially nowadays, I have all sorts of wonderful gifts that people give me at conventions. On my keychain, I have a ridiculous number of Legoshi stuff. This character has become part of my identity, less so it's just a character they play. This is Legoshi is very important to me. But there's a lot of myself in the character and performance in English. Good question, thank you. Yeah, right there.
Besides Legoshi, which characters do you think is the most, how do I say this, which characters inspire your voice? Like, is there any characters that inspire how you perform while doing voice recordings?
I don't know how many of you guys have played, if any at all, I've played Dying Light 2. I was that character, Aiden Caldwell, for about, say, 5 years, because I didn't start as the character. That didn't come from an audition. That was me doing scratch track for Techland, and I was like, hey, I know Techland from Dead Island. I know Techland from, you know, Call of Juarez, you know, a bunch of other fantastic games that they made, and I wanted to be a part of this. And this is the sequel to a game that I played a lot as a college student, Dying Light. I played that from toe to tip several times. Roger Craig Smith is another inspiration. I keep bringing that question back. Well, Roger Craig Smith is another inspiration to my performances. And bringing it back to your question, they made that character, it was so crazy, the entire production process. I pretty much begged them to voice that character. I was in my closet recording scratch tracks for the entire game, start to finish, the entire game, for about a year and a half. In every single session, I would be on with the narrative director, and I would be like, hey man, I love your studio, I love you guys, I know what this game is, I know, you know, the characters, I know the universe, I know the lore, I know the stories, please let me voice this character in the real thing. And every time, it would be like, we'll think about it. And I had a year of radio silence, and then, to kind of be a little bit reductive about it, they got back to me and they're like, yeah, we tried to audition a bunch of other people and we couldn't find anybody to embody Aiden better than you. And that kind of made me cry a little bit. I was like, oh my God, they're going to trust me with this. And as we were recording the actual game itself, they started to make him look like me. And they started to show me renders of the character, and they're like, hey, what do you think of this? And I'm like, hey, did you get a license fee for this? Because this looks almost exactly like me. And they're like, no, you know, to get around a lot of things, we're not going to necessarily pay you the license fee, but we took your headshots and we kind of made them look like you, and you know what, I wanted to be in the game so bad, I didn't care. I didn't know, like, yeah, cool, oh my God, the game company made this character look like you. They're writing the lines around your personality. Like, and when I got into the booth itself, they were like, how would Aiden say this? And I'm like, I don't know, dude, you're writing the game. And they're just like, no, just, what do you think he would say? So I got to rewrite a lot of the stuff as we were recording. That never happens, by the way. If you get brought on as an audition, like, no, the writing, the narrative director and the writer both all have, you know, 100% creative liberty over whatever you say. Doesn't matter. But I got to influence, like, gameplay things, too. There was one fun little thing that I was doing called, I call them quiz, but Dying Light 2 is a parkour zombie survival game. If you've never played it, please do.
My brother plays it.
It is insanely good, especially now, once they fix a lot of bugs and stuff. It is really, really, really well made.
Which game?
Dying Light 2, the sequel to another parkour survival zombie game called Dying Light. In the sequel, they wanted him to be, they're like, we need him to be a little bit less Batman, and we need him to be more Nightwing. We need this character to be a little bit more Nightwing. And I'm like, okay, so what if, like, when he's doing parkour, I know game design, right? Because I took a few game design classes, and one of my roommates is a full-bred game designer. So I talked to him about a few of these things. And I'm like, hey, man, do you have any, like, game design ideas? He's like, well, a lot of game play revolves around concept of flow, which I'm sure you guys understand what the concept of flow is, and that's when you start playing a game after about an hour, maybe 90 minutes into playing the game, you are in it. You are playing the game. You understand the concept, you understand what the game is trying to get you to do, you get the dopamine receptors, you understand the toe to tip. So what if the flow of the game is parkour to some extent? So you're parkouring, you nail really cool moves. You do backflips and front flips. You manage to, you know, land jumps that normal humans wouldn't be able to do because Aiden is kind of superpowered. What if he had some sort of cool, like, when you're doing game design, you have to hit the dopamine receptors, right? It's just like gambling, right? And it's kind of a terrible comparison, but it's just like gambling. You have to hit the dopamine receptors, right? So one of the dopamine hits can be a voice line. You know, it can be an animation. It can be, you know, some bright lights and loud sounds or whatever, right? So my roommate was like, what if he had some sort of cool quips every time he hit a flow, right? And that informed a composer note, where the composer's like, okay, whenever he hits flow in the gameplay thing, and he keeps getting, you know, good, and he lands these hits better and better, the music gets bigger and swells and becomes more orchestral. So I have this thing every time you hit the flow, and then the music starts to go, he has a voice line. He has this really cool, like, quip. He's like, okay. He keeps, like, talking to himself and encouraging himself, right? Not just himself, he's encouraging you, right? The player, the person who's playing the game. So it was really neat to be able to be that intimately designed with some game design elements, and getting to write those flow lines on the spot. They're just like, okay, we have this idea where he's just going to say lines when he starts to hit flow. And I'm like, okay, do you have anything for me? He's like, no, just give us, like, 30 of them. Okay, you can pay for this? Like, I'm writing this, right? But no, I just kind of, like, went with it. And when you're a video game voice actor, there's a lot of stuff that's done on the fly, right? There's a lot of, like, efforts that are done on the fly. All of the efforts in Dying Light 2 were done in a day. 1 5-hour session of me just screaming my head off, right? You gotta think about it, right? If you think about a game that's, like, first-person action RPG, you're dying by, like, 9 different means, maybe more. You are, you know, like, you know, over and over and over again, like 90 of each of those, right? So that was all done in a day. But yeah, it was really, really neat to be that intimately involved in that that gameplay, you know, area. It was really fun. Good question, thank you. Way in the back there.
Yeah. So you kind of, like, thinking back off what you just said, how you were just constantly recording, like, those voice lines in the game, specifically, like, game lines rather than story.
Yeah.
I remember, like, the few interviews Ray Liotta did about Grand Theft Auto Vice City, he specifically said, like, I never played the game, I'm never a video game fan. Oh, my character was just, like, constantly swearing and, like, killing people and stuff. But it's very obvious that all he did was just sit there, like, and just...
And be Ray Liotta?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a fun story kind of in that vein. Where we recorded Dying Light 2 was the same studio and the same booth where Keanu Reeves recorded Cyberpunk. And the director, who was also the director of some portions of Cyberpunk, and the engineer and studio head, who were also present during the entire time of Cyberpunk, I don't want to throw Keanu under the bus, he's a fantastic person, but they had told me several times, this is the, Keanu had said numerous times during the session, this was the hardest thing he's ever had to do, was voice acting. Because you don't get to show your face unless they want you to. You don't get to, you know, a lot of the time, and there he did mocap, yes, of course, but there are lines in the game where you don't get to mocap. You just have to act, right? And they just kind of use a stock animation from a mocap actor over in London or something like that, right? So a lot of the time, Keanu had to lean on that mocap actor, or a lot of the time, Keanu had to just make his voice what made the character. And I played Cyberpunk, toe to tip, 3 times,
ooh,
right? There are some lines where I'm like, oh my god, Keanu is so good as Johnny Silverhand. I can't picture anybody else as Johnny Silverhand. But there are other, what are called wild lines, which doesn't necessarily have any sort of timing or film or aspect to it at all. But there are, and those wild lines, I'm like, Keanu's really having a hard time with this. Like, I'm not saying it's bad, because Keanu Reeves isn't a bad actor. It's just, you can tell that this probably took 4 or 5 different takes in order to get what the director wanted. And you can tell, like, oh, I can tell Keanu may be a little bit frustrated here, where he's not getting it in the first take, and that's not usual for him. So he had to be drilled several times, maybe even given a line read. That happens to me all the time. Given a line read, sometimes it's a little bit humiliating as a voice actor, because you're just like, well, my one job is to be here and be the voice. And if I'm not doing that right, what am I doing right, right? So it's tough, especially for film actors who come in and do the voice acting thing. There are several film actors who excel at voice acting. What's his name? Supernatural, you guys can probably throw it at me. What's his name? Jensen Ackles, right? Jensen Ackles, amazing voice actor. Really, really good at his job. Fantastic. But then you have actors like Keanu who have never really done voice acting before and are coming in. It's like, here's a AAA action RPG. You are the deuteragonist. You have to sell this. You're the one who's on screen the entire time, not V, right? V isn't on screen the whole time. Keanu is the one who is the projection of everything, and you have to witness everything through his eyes. That's a challenge. So there are a lot of reasons that things sound the way they do, and it's not necessarily the fact that the actor is bad. A lot of the time, the direction is poor. You know, especially in video gaming, video game design. I was explained by my roommate in a very, very succinct term. Making a video game is like making a sandwich. You can't make a sandwich until all the other parts are done, right? You can't make a sandwich with a bunch of dough. It doesn't make any sense. It won't taste good. It won't look good, right? You have to wait till the bread is done being baked before you start making a sandwich. You have to wait till the meat is sliced before you start making a sandwich, right? So all of the audio, the visuals, the mocap, the game mechanics, the programming, they all have to be done before you can slap them together. And that's the hardest part of game design. VO is the last thing you do, right? And Keanu, I would imagine, was involved in some, like, narrative stuff, was involved in some line rewrites, was involved in some scripting. So, that's a very good question, very insightful. Thank you so much. Yeah, right there.
So, I know you said you had a character that you really loved and you wanted to play, but is there a character that already exists that the company comes out and says, hey, so-and-so doesn't want to play them anymore. We want you to play them. Who would you want that to be?
Vincent Valentine. Vincent Valentine from Final Fantasy. I would kill somebody. I would straight up kill somebody. I would kill somebody to play Vincent Valentine. I would murder somebody. I'm a little bit of a stream, but I would love to play Vincent Valentine. They are cast to somebody that I'm sure is going to do a good job. I haven't heard a whole lot of their performance, but Toji Fushiguro in JJK would have loved to have got the opportunity to read for that. Unfortunately, I wasn't given the opportunity. There are numerous characters across fiction that you look at them and you're just like, dude. Especially now since I've only been doing this for 2 years. So now that I'm in the industry for a couple of years, I start to realize the archetypes that people are throwing at me, my agents are throwing at me, and it's like, oh my god, okay, cool. So I play this cool, average dude, right? And that's like 70% of game characters at this point, right? So you see somebody come out in like a manga or like video game, you're like, dude, I would really, really love to play that character. So the more you do this, the more you realize your typecast, and then I get people coming to my DMs, other directors and other actors, be like, dude, have you seen this guy in this show? You would nail it. And I'm like, yeah, cool, too bad I'm not going to audition for it, but it'd be really cool if I got the voice of that character. As you work in this industry, you'll start to realize what you're good at and what people like to hear you as. And a fun side effect of that is that I like to play those characters. I have friends that play villains constantly, and they're like, I love doing it first. But I'm getting tired of playing the bad guy. Which is understandable. And then they get given the opportunity to be like a romantic lead or something like that, and they knock it out of the park! And they do an amazing job! Which just goes to show you that, like, getting the opportunity to stretch your range is as long as you're a proven actor, is a really, really great move for your career. Very good question, thank you.
Yeah. How much, this is kind of a two-part question, when you became Legoshi, did you expect it to blow up in the sense of the furry fandom as much as it did?
Yeah, of course I did.
In two, are you slowly but surely maybe becoming a bit of a furry yourself?
I like to say that I am furry adjacent because I have to keep the door open to let more people in. So I stand at the door and I let people in and be like, hey, can you check this out? Check this out. Look at Legoshi, look at Beastars. It's pretty cool, right? I know you have a bit of like apprehension to this whole thing, but I am a normal person, right? I'm just letting you in here and I'm letting you look around for a little bit. I'm not responsible if you stay, but like, just check it out. So like, I like to think of myself as like the doorman or the gatekeeper or something like that. I don't like to say gatekeeping, but I like to be like, hey, the door's open, come on in, right? I know you might have some apprehension of coming in, but like, and the thing is, if I put that label on myself, immediately people are just like, I don't want to come in. No, I don't want to come in. But if I kind of keep myself adjacent to the whole thing, which I'm like, you know, wink and a nudge to you guys, right? Keep myself adjacent to the whole thing, it keeps the door wide open and lets people go in and explore a little bit. And the door's open to come leave if you want to. So I 100% expected this to blow up with the furry fandom because I was part of it. I'm just like, oh my god, furries are gonna love this guy. He's this shy, awkward nerd who's like 6'3" and like really hot. Like, of course. Exactly. But I have to kind of keep a lid on it to make sure that the Zorbies are able to go in, and then we can let them experience what they will, and if they decide to stay, they can, and if they don't, you know, that's their own prerogative.
Well, there have been some recent movies like The Bad Guys that are very mass appeal. No, that guy's a wolf, you know.
Exactly.
Oh my god, I'm turning into a furry. I like that movie.
Well, in Philadelphia, do you?
Yeah.
Just saying that. Come on, Sam Rockwell. It's in seats right here, Sam.
Yeah.
I open the door, I keep it open.
Yeah.
Good question.
How
are
you? Yeah, way in the back there.
Yeah, so you mentioned earlier that you had already read and seen Yanovit.
Yeah.
Like, had you been into the show, or had you been into Beastars for a long time beforehand, so that you knew the characters for a while, or was it more so that, like, you saw the anime once, and then, like, within a few months, you replaced that movie?
Well, I would say that I had more of a secondary kind of... It was another anime that I had watched, and it was another manga that I had watched. My roommate at the time was a wonderful writer named Jalen Cassell, an actor as well. I slept on his floor for a year. He voices Okuyasu in Golden Wind. Or not Golden Wind. Part 4, I think? Yeah.
Diamond is a Breaking
One. He voices Okuyasu. Fantastic guy. He taught me how to dub. He's a great guy. I slept on his floor for a year, and he was the one that actually showed me Beastars in the manga itself first. He showed me the manga. And I'm like, oh, okay, is this going to be turned into a show anytime? He's like, oh yeah, there's a couple episodes already out right now. They're not necessarily like out, but they're like being made, and we think it's going to be a pretty good show. It is an incredibly good, you know... And Jalen is an artist, right? He's the kind of guy that gets into the nitty-gritty of the character motivations and what makes a good story, and what you reveal immediately versus what you reveal later down the line, and he's very good at deciding that stuff. And I kind of like, I was like, yeah, this seems really good. This is a really well written story. It is a trope that is often explored, but rarely to its fullest extent. And I feel like that's something that it did. I wouldn't say I was hyper fixated on it at all. But I definitely, it was definitely something that I was like, oh my god, this is a good show. I really hope people give, this is a good manga. I really hope people give it the credit that it's due, whether it comes from like a style departation from normal manga, or a thematic departation from normal manga or something like that. No, it is not your shonen anime, but it's definitely something that could become that if given enough time and love and effort. So yeah, I definitely was hyper aware of it. I may not have been, you know, I haven't collected all the manga or anything like that. I have now. I definitely knew what it was when I got the audition for it, for sure. Good question. Thank you very much. Yeah, you're right there in the band.
Were there any major differences
from going from like anime voice acting to gaming voice acting?
Differences in like performance?
Yeah.
Yes. There are things called acting styles, and I used to teach a panel on this way back when I had the time to put together a PowerPoint presentation for conventions. But there are different acting styles, and you know, acting styles can gravitate from theatrical acting styles to cinematic acting styles to, you know, anime acting styles, if you want to get a little reductive with it. But video game styles is a huge genre that, you know, teachers in Los Angeles and abroad kind of try and bring to the fore. There's a reason why your real-time strategy game doesn't sound the same as your MMO. There's a reason your Call of Duty shooter doesn't sound the same as Animal Crossing. You know, there's reasons for all that stuff. And that comes down to acting styles. So when you're doing Call of Duty, I was extras in Warzone. I was just a bunch of randos. It didn't really matter. You wouldn't hear my voice, or you would have heard my voice and been like, that's just a rando that came in. No, it was me. I did, you know, enemy left, enemy right, grenade, 0-1 actual, this is literally, you know, whatever. And that's an acting style, right? I don't sit down and do grounded mocap when I do battle chatter, which is what that is. Battle chatter is whatever you hear over the radio when you're doing, you know, UAV inbound, you know, AC-130 above, that kind of thing, right? And then you have, like, you know, RPG stuff where you do accented things, or you do, you know, we want a South London accent, but we don't want it to be too egregious. We want it to sound natural, but we don't want to hire a real person from South London, you know? We get somebody from LA who sounds like they're from South London. But yeah, and that's you have to be versatile like that. You have to be able to if you can't do that, you have to make them think you can. And not necessarily like lie to them, but be like, yeah, I can pull that off. Give me the time, and you give me the direction, and we can make that work, right? And then they will eventually, after the audition, choose the best person for the job. And that's just how it works. So, yeah, acting styles definitely do play a role. I don't voice for Armored Core. I don't do that voice the same as I would for, I voice a character named Randy Orlando in Trails of Cold Steel, which is a JRPG, a localization. But that character doesn't sound the same as Jason from Armored Core, or, you know, any of the Islander fighters from Ace Fighter or something like that. These are all localizations that I'm in, but they all sound different. And again, that does come down to direction. That comes down to game genre. That comes down to, you know, feel, right? You can have a first person shooter that they want to sound like a cartoon, Borderlands, right? You can have a turn based RPG that sounds like a real time, or that sounds like a, you know, an RPG or whatever. You know, you can have an RTS that sounds like an RPG or whatever, and you get like Warhammer or something like that, right? And being familiar with these IPs and genres puts you halfway there. I'm going to say that flat out. Knowing what they want is halfway there. Even if it does sacrifice a little bit of creative liberty, knowing what they want the Astartes to sound like in Warhammer is halfway to... Fun, interesting fact, okay? There was a game that came out last year called Warhammer. I'm a huge 40K nut, okay? I love Warhammer 40K.
I'm so happy you are.
huge war nerd. And I got an audition for Warhammer 40K Chaos Gate Demon Hunter. Big name, but it is turn-based tactical strategy, which is, I'm a huge fan of turn-based tactical strategy, which is why I sunk like 200 plus hours into Baldur's Gate 3. But I knew what they want from the characters. I know what they're supposed to sound like. I've been mocking them since I was 10 years old anyway. You know, I wanted to be in this for, you know, decades. And I got in. I got to the last round of, this is like, oh, we're doing the session, right? So we get in, I'm with the producers from Game Workshop and a bunch of other people. And they're like, so where are you from in Britain? And I'm like, I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio. And they're like, oh, you're not like local British. And I'm like, no, I thought you were remote. and I'm like 6 hours behind, so I kind of thought you figured that I was from Ohio. And they're like, oh, unfortunately, we're only just like, we're looking for authentic British actors at this point, so we'll pay you for your time, but we can't put you in the game. And I'm like, that sucked. It was really a blow to me, because I'm like, I'm clearly good enough to be in this game. I clearly have what they're looking for. I fooled them long enough to be into the session, right? I sounded like a native British speaker for long enough, but they really did just want authentic British speakers. And you know what? That's their prerogative. I have to be like, thank you so much for your time. Maybe next time, if you need an American, I'm right here. Yeah, so sometimes you can't win them all, even if you are good enough. A lot of the times, especially nowadays, it's all about being inclusive. Making sure that, you know, the trans character is played by a trans actor. You know, it's making sure that the gay character is played. I play a lot of bisexual himbos. That's me. That's what I do. That's my thing. I play, you know, Joe from Skate the Infinity, bisexual hotel. I play Akihiko Kaji in Gibbon. Well, you got one question, right? 5 more minutes. Okay. All right. But yeah, I play a lot of bisexual himbos. That's just what I do. And that is accurate casting. That's what I know. That's what I do. So yeah, accurate casting is huge, and if they want a British person, they're going to get a British person. Then it doesn't matter how good you are. But yeah, we got one more question from somebody who hasn't asked a question yet.
I'll ask before you
break. You want to ask a question? We'll get 2 more questions. I'll speed through this one, okay? Yeah, what's up?
You mentioned earlier you had auditions for Louis and Bill for Beastars.
Oh yeah.
Obviously, with the final product out there, we don't hear them in the final, but I was just wondering what your interpretations of those characters were.
I will be able to post those after season 3 comes out. I have double confirmation from Netflix that we're all going to be able to post our auditions for characters we didn't book. I won't do it right now, but if you follow me on Twitter or you know, Tumblr or wherever you decide to follow me, I will post those auditions because I have them on my desktop. So you will be able to hear them. They sound terrible. And I got double confirmation from Griffin. And as well as Ben Diskin and a couple of other actors who may be posting their auditions as well. I don't know if Ben's going to do it because he's, you know...
Please, make him do it.
He's old guard, but he's a good friend of mine, so I may be able to convince him, but Griffin definitely confirmed. Anyway, yeah, you'll hear them eventually. So, good question. Yeah. One more.
What do you find more fulfilling? Video game, video game voice acting or anime?
Yeah. What's your favorite child?
Okay. Who's your favorite child?
Yeah.
I love doing video games a lot, okay? I love doing video games for a lot of reasons, because a lot of times you can do what's called pre-lay, which is before they lay down any sort of animation. So you are the one that dictates how the character sounds, right? When it comes to anime, you have to get, you know, as close to what the director wants and as close to what the Japanese had, you kind of got to marry that. So it's more of a fun, unique challenge to do localization in anime, because you have to kind of please everybody, including a fandom. But when you're doing video games, you have to please yourself as an artist, which is almost as hard, if not harder, because you have to be like, I am proud of this, right? This didn't just get red stamped by a director and, you know, a producer. This got red stamped by my soul. So, yeah, they're fun for different reasons. It's kind of like playing, I liken playing characters in anime and like localized video games to playing Guitar Hero, where she's like, yeah, 5-starred that song. Hell yeah, we did a great job. Everybody loved it. The crowd's going wild. Rock on. But then you, like, you know, you get down and you're just, you know, you're playing Shakespeare when you do video games and stuff like that. And you're like, I don't know if I like that. Let's do 7 more takes. Yeah, let's do 7 more takes, and we'll pick the best one, and then we'll do 5 more, and then we'll compare that to the one that we just did. And it's just like, you know, you're there for hours and hours and hours.
So I guess it's like saying, you know, anime is you're appeasing the director's version of the character, and for video games, you're trying to appease yourself of the version of the character.
Yeah, as well as the director. And when you're doing anime, the best part is when the fans say, you did a good job.
When you say director, are you referring to like a line producer or like somebody?
Oh no, the ADR director.
Okay, specifically for ADR, not.
Yeah, like Mike McFarland is the ADR director for Attack on Titan and One Piece and stuff.
I assume the Japanese have nothing to do with you.
There are no Japanese at all in the production chair, unless it's like something absolutely titanic. Like Demon Slayer, there's a Japanese producer in the chair for Demon Slayer, but there was also an American producer, an American director, the American casting director is all there. If it is a big profile thing, there's 9 people who are listening to you do whatever you're doing. But if it's like, I got turned into a fridge and now I love my best friend or something like that, right? And it's not that they don't care. Yeah, everybody cares and we're all trying to make good anime. It's just like, you know, oh, this is this year's Isekai, guy. Okay, it's not that big of a deal, right? Anyway, thank you guys so much for your time. I appreciate every single one of you watching us. Say hi. Happy Philadelphia, guys. Yeah.